True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer, coming at you a little early because I thought I would just have a small little session before we start right up, straight up 10:15 per the announcement, and just kind of have this personal moment with y'all. First of all, I hope everybody had a tremendous 4th of July and that it was safe and good and just a great time for you and your families. And secondarily, I wanted to talk a little bit about Tony Bruschi's wedding. I thought it was so great he chose the 4th of July. And I just want to say it was one of the most beautiful wedding ceremonies I've ever been to. It was just so beautiful. It was at, and I think I can say this now because it's afterwards, it was at the largest Ruth Chris steakhouse in the world. And I was thinking, because I'm very familiar with Ruth Chris, and I was thinking, wait a minute, how can that be? No, this was multiple venues within that facility. It was absolutely beautiful. They had a chapel there all set up in Ruth Chris Steakhouse. The food was amazing. Let me just say, he spared nothing for his guests. His wife was stunning. Beautiful. She reminds me of Adele. Pretty red hair. I would call her strawberry blonde, but definitely red. Like the real beautiful, just light blonde, or I'm sorry, light red strawberry hair. Just beautiful. She could actually sing too. Anyway, it was just a lot of fun. It was also, of course, great for me personally to meet for the first time Robin Dreeke. I know for those of you who watched Tony Bruschi's show, Hidden Killers, which, by the way, I never knew this, but he also, how he began with all of this was with ghost stories. So telling ghost stories, basically. I think this was years ago, and he still does it. So if you all don't know that, I guess there's a ghost stories podcast with Tony Bruschi. I would check it out because I had a lot of conversations with them about paranormal activity, what they found. And I thought it was very interesting that they do that, which I didn't know. I mean, I know he's in so many different areas and podcasting has always been his main side. But for those of you who don't know, he just hit 200,000. I was so blessed for 50,000. I still feel blessed at 50,000 on YouTube. He has 200,000 on YouTube. So congratulations there. I always just wish fellow creators all the success in the world. Because I love to see creators like him that are legitimate, that are really, really good succeeding, because that means that his audience, you know, they're intelligent, they're looking for that. They're not looking for Days of Our Lives or The Guiding Light, you know, because truly true crime should not substitute that. It's very interesting to me. It should be like watching Forensic Files or a television show based on truth that you're following, Deadline episode. To me, that's just my opinion, that YouTube creators in the true crime arena, that should be our goal, to create a fact-oriented, interesting show, obviously, but it shouldn't be drama and stuff. And oh my gosh, I just, everywhere I look on the Nancy Guthrie, I'm still stunned, shocked, and amazed. But we're going to get into talking about her. Let's see. Oh, we still have 8 minutes. We're probably going to start a little bit early then with the show. I know normally I run a couple minutes late trying to get everything uploaded, but I had News Nation tonight and was able to jump and get right into this right after that. So that's why I'm a little bit early. I'm going to see if there's any questions. I will tell you that, and for those of you who have followed me for any length of time, oh my gosh, this is so nice, Sherry Lynn. Thank you so much for becoming a member. Everybody knows to me, you know, I know it's half the cost of a Starbucks, but And I will always keep the price low. You will never see me up the price here, because I just really love y'all being part of our community. So thank you so much, Sherry Lynn. I appreciate it. Yeah, the wedding was beautiful. The people there were great. His family, just everyone. It was such a positive, great environment. And I was excited to meet one of Tony's contributors, and she was fabulous. And I'm going to have her on the show. I want to give you her exact, sorry, I dropped it. I want to give you her exact, she is a, I want to make sure I get this right. I believe she's a clinical psychiatrist, and she is great. Another member here, I just want to recognize and say thank you for being a member for 3 months. Thank you so much, Immortal Sergeant. I know who you are. I think you're also on Twitter. I've always loved, but it's Siobhan Scott, and Siobhan is on his show and particularly breaks down a lot of, that's who I sat with a huge majority of the wedding and the reception. We ate together. Oh my gosh, she was lovely. I'm going to have her on the show for sure, as one of our other sort of profilers, because that's what she does. And so it'll be nice to have her on the show. I know we have several that we bring on, but I'm really excited to have her after talking to her about, a lot of different cases, including Nancy Guthrie. So I'm going to have her on probably about Nancy Guthrie. I just want to make sure that I have squared away the angle I really want her to focus on the Nancy Guthrie case. It was very interesting for those of you who either have followed me on X or, you know, even here. Listen, Bob Mata and Ali Mata, who was his wife, Bob Mata, not really with Ali so much, but Bob and I have had our moments. There's no doubt about it. Early on, very early on when I first got on X. And I just have to say, we might not agree on everything, right? He comes from the defense attorney side. And I was always on the side of putting bad guys in prison. So I just have to say, after being around them for hours and hours and hours, I thoroughly enjoyed both Bob and Ali Mata. Sorry. We talked a lot about true crime, and I was shocked at how much we actually agreed on. It was really shocking. And, you know, I just wanted to say it is so interesting. I think so much is lost in words if you don't put out a book. I always use this example. If I tweet, I'm homesick, what do you take from that? Do you think I'm home and I'm ill? Or do you think that I miss my home? And the reason I use that one is I sent that text to a friend once, and she asked me, what do you mean? Or I think she took it the opposite way I meant it. Like I was homesick, but I meant I'm home and I'm ill. So words are very difficult, I think, sometimes on Twitter, because it's really short, even though some of my tweets are way too long. They're like a book. But I noticed even today, I really am going to stay on the 16 that were found in Ohio. That I have a lot of passion about that case because there's so many cases. I really need to keep bringing up all the other cases that happen like this, where families, children are literally sequestered and treated so horribly. Ones that don't make the media. There's a lot of them out there. And I guess maybe it just brings back a lot of memories and bad memories, really, working gangs, working organized crime, working human trafficking, seeing the condition of children. I know I should have been equally as upset as the condition of all humans, adults, but it's the children that for me was very hard And it brings me back to probably a lot of moments I've probably forgotten of things you've seen. I've never seen 16 and smaller like that, but I've seen, let's see, what was probably the most? Probably three. It's really bad. So I'm going to stay on that case. I know I have a lot of people pointing out, yeah, they had birth certificates. I keep researching. All I can find is the defense saying that, and the family saying that. I can't find the official saying that. If anybody in chat knows about it, I had somebody, on Twitter just come after me. Jen, they have birth certificates. No, I actually don't. I don't believe one word the family says, and I don't believe one word the defense attorney says because they're getting their information from the family. So until authorities come out and say they were born in hospitals and they have records, I mean, they were using their initials. If they had their birth records, they would have more than initials. I still really fear what was going on and what the purpose of their confinement and keeping them away from society really was. But nevertheless, I'm going to stay on that case too. All right, everybody, that was kind of a fun intro because I was up here early, but it's time to get at the true crime at hand, which again, we're going to be discussing Nancy Guthrie, her abduction. And I want to start off the show by saying this, and this is probably something I might show every show. Specifically, the FBI, because I believe they were so irritated at the Reuters report. Remember, a report came out, Reuters, and the Reuters report said all the ransom notes, they called them generally ransom notes, are all fakes. I've explained that there's what I call the TMZ 12. Those are the extortion notes. That's after the fact where people are saying, listen, I'll take you to her. I'll show you a video. I've got a cell phone with this. I know she's buried in Sonora, whatever it might be. Those are extortion because they are not saying that they kidnapped her. They're just saying they know, which we all know is baloney, BS. I think we pretty much called it for what it is. It's all baloney. And I talked about before how horrible it is that Kalela, we did this last episode, is probably only going to get 5 years probation out of the whole thing. And what a bad precedent it sets in this case for others that are extorting. I've also talked about how we know about TMZ and other media outlets. I promise you, social media creators have also gotten notes. They just haven't talked about them publicly to their credit. So nevertheless, how disappointing is it that people who receive these notes are the people who did this and who are sending this are likely only going to get a slap on the hand, a slap on the wrist. So it's really disappointing, and I think it's disappointing all the way around. But back to this, I'm always going to show this. The FBI finally comes out. Finally. Everybody keeps saying the FBI never says anything. It's also always Pima County, Pima County. Well, here you got it, everyone. And they say investigating as a kidnap for ransom. And I talked about how you actually have to do predication. Predication meaning you have to predicate or lay out why you are opening a case a certain way. You have to list the particular criminal statutes and you have to explain why you are opening this as the category of kidnap for ransom case in your EC, your electronic communication, when you open up a case. So this is what they're investigating. They're not investigating a burglary. They're not investigating a hate crime. They're not investigating anything else other than that. That's what they're, look, we're going on 6 months. We are literally going on 6 months, everyone. 6 months will be August 1st because I have that some FBI stuff for everyone who's a member that we're going to draw your name. And I want to send it to you just as a small token. I'll probably do it once a year as a small token of my gratitude for being part of this community. The reason people don't like this, and I tell you, I'm probably going to pull the trigger at some point soon. And actually, because I've got the clips of different creators that are still trying to drive home subtly and unsubtly that it's Annie and Tommaso. They just can't let it go. Even after this came out, everyone. Confirmation bias. It's an evil thing. But what I want to talk about today is, and I think it's important to talk about it, I've got two clips. We're going to talk about them on the other side. Let's talk about some things being said. Here we go.
And you know, it was a really interesting side.
Here we go.
That's interesting. You know what I was just thinking of? That early on in the investigation, there were certain items that were found that got a lot of news attention.
I'll tell you what, let's listen to it all the way through and then we'll slow it down because I don't want to chop it up like this. Apologies. I was going to address it point by point, but let me let him get through this. This is really short. It's like a minute long. We'll talk about it on the other side.
What it is, because they haven't done anything with this, but there was one particular item. And I talked to somebody in the FBI who said, we believe that somebody in the media may have planted that item to get attention. And that if they can prove that and they believed it to be true, they would prosecute the individual. And that never happened. It never happened.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And you know, it was just a really interesting sidebar. We never really talked about, we never reported that. But I remember somebody told me that. And they really believed it. But again, maybe there's no proof of it because they never prosecuted anybody on that. It was just an interesting kind of sidebar for me that they were really having trouble containing things because there was so much interest. Everybody was getting in everybody's way.
Well, and the most contaminated scene you could ever imagine if you had sent to wanted to design how to have a transference issues and create a defense lawyer's petri dish for mischief, it would have been the way that crime scene was handled.
All right, let's break this down. For anybody who doesn't know, Harvey Levin is an attorney. He started TMZ. TMZ, that many of you know, their main focus is on celebrities, but they also do a lot in true crime. And I will tell you about the fact that they find stuff. They have the money to do it. They have the resources. They have the people. They get a lot of information. I'm going to give you an example. I'll give you two cases, actually, just really quick. One was Tyler Robinson related to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. They got from a neighbor, Tyler Robinson, in that adjacent neighborhood running around with the gun down his pants, right? Very, very interesting. I mean, that they broke that. They break a lot of things like that. Again, they have the money. They have the people to blitzkrieg and go into these neighborhoods and get what they're looking for and break this news. And that's why they have millions and millions of subscribers on all their social media. They have all these television shows. To think that they are not seen and that they are very well seen. They are out there. And I think that that is a huge reason why the kidnappers, if these notes are true, chose TMZ. By the way, Grunge, I agree with you. All right. Second person on your right here, and he is a friend of mine. I think so much of Mark Garagos. He is a brilliant lawyer. I agree with him on almost nothing. When it comes to cases, Scott Peterson is probably my biggest issue. And he, you know, we can sit down. I've been in studio with him where we will sit down and discuss something we don't agree about. And, you know, but I highly respect his skills as an attorney. And he represents A-listers and has, obviously, he's toward his retirement. You know, he takes fewer cases. Now his daughter is taking all the big stuff, right? She did Diddy. And I believe her law firm is, I don't think she's handling it, but is also handling Luigi. So she has really made it. I had the pleasure and honor of meeting her, really liked her. Her name's Tenny, beautiful woman and very talented like her dad. But it doesn't mean I agree with them. It's how you civilly disagree. So we civilly disagree. But I respect his opinions. Here we go. So we're going to break this down now slowly, why I thought this was important to bring up. And I've got two of them, but we're going to do this one first.
That's interesting. You know what I was just thinking of? That early on.
He's so funny. You know what I was just thinking of? He drops this bombshell. Like it's just. Anyway.
On in the investigation, there were certain items that were found that got a lot of news attention.
You know what I think they're talking about? The gloves. That's the only thing this really hits home with me, right? It was likely the gloves. We know there were 16 gloves found. Just to recoup with everybody the facts, there were 16 gloves found. We know one set of gloves belonged to a restaurant person. Somebody from a restaurant had discarded their gloves, right? I talked a lot about and showed a lot of pictures of both local and FBI who had these exact same black, not blue, black gloves stuffed in their back pockets as they were searching and going around all this area. Remember, they searched these streets. Did I grab those photos? I have a lot of photos of them searching these street areas. Shoot, I don't have it. I do have the section from the FBI saying, and this was another announcement by Phoenix. I actually thought there were only two. There were three because I had forgotten about this one, but found this saying, listen, they're going to be out there looking, right? I think this is what Harvey is talking about. I really think it was about the gloves. And I will also want to bring it home that the glove, and I said this at the time, the restaurant worker whose DNA was found in one of the gloves, we don't know which glove that was. We don't know if it was the one that the New York Post posted about, and they happened to be following around these FBI agents when they found it on the side of the road. I think it's actually that glove that Harvey's talking about. That's my belief. I, you know, based on the fact it was huge in the news, right? The gloves. Oh, and remember, they were found like a mile and a half away. So for me, I never really thought it was that big of a clue, but it was huge in the news. And then the Post got that picture and, you know, and then the law enforcement came out and said, by the way, that one of the gloves found of the 16 was consistent. Remember that? Was consistent with what Porch Guy wore. So that made it even more interesting, right? And then, of course, the New York Post was there right when it happened, which I think a lot of people were like, how did they get so lucky? I think that this is what Harvey is talking about. And it's just something to consider because that's one of his competitors. I mean, the New York Post has done, in my opinion, a very good job covering this case. They are all over it. There's a lot of Newsweek for me. You know, I contribute to Newsweek regularly. And Newsweek, I have so much faith in their reporting. I know their reporters. I know their writers. They're amazing, I think. If you're just looking at hardcore facts without any, you know, Newsweek is not going to be out there following you know, the FBI around and find a glove, right? That's not what they do. But they do a great job, I think, of very intelligently. Their writers are so amazing, their backgrounds. So anyway, I'm partial. It's like I'm partial to News Nation. I'm partial to Newsweek because I know the people and I have a lot of faith in them. So anyway, that's my plug for Newsweek. But Bobby asked, and so I wanted to say it again, that I don't believe, and I actually had a clip from Nanos, and he kind of snickers on this. I don't think the restaurant worker's glove was the one that was found that the New York Post saw. You know what I'm saying here? I think it was one of the others, because they never, ever really said what glove it was. And there were 16 gloves, and they reported that. 16 gloves. So in other words, we don't know whether it was the glove that everybody that made a lot of news or one of the other 15. So I wish I knew, but I did see Nano snicker about that, kind of like, huh, I know, but I'm not saying. I need to find that clip so I could play it, because they asked him about if the restaurant worker was that glove. He doesn't really give it up that it is. All right, let's get back to Harvey.
I'm not going to say what it is, because they haven't done anything with this, but there was...
Harvey, we're not stupid. We can figure out what it is. Okay, sorry.
One particular item. And I talked to somebody in the FBI who said, we believe that somebody in the media may have planted that item to get attention, and that if they can prove that and they believed it to be true, they would prosecute the individual.
Now, I'll tell you why the Bureau would probably prosecute something like this, just because of all that manpower that would be spent. I mean, all those gloves, they've got to do a DNA collection. They've got to send that collection into the lab. They're going to have to discern who it belongs to, because just in case they threw the glove. And I will tell you, bad guys do things like that. They really do. They pitch weapons. They pitch ammunition. They pitch gloves. They pitch a lot of things. I don't think that is porch guy. I really don't. I don't think that is or would have been his MO. I think he kept everything close. I don't think he got rid of everything. Where we see this is more with idiot, juvenile, you know, wrongdoers, gangbangers. They throw everything because they think, oh, good, I got rid of it. They won't get me with it. I think porch guy, even though I know he's unsophisticated in some ways, I think he would not have thrown anything out the window. I think he kept everything right there. He had a plan for where he was going to take her to. He had a plan. It didn't work. But I don't think he was throwing stuff out the window. But still, that's why the Bureau would be interested in, or local law enforcement should be interested in. By the way, that wouldn't be a Bureau case, typically. I could see the interest in wanting to get somebody. But again, it would be a slap on the wrist. If Kalel is only going to get 5 years probation, can you imagine what the glove planter for whatever media source he's referring to, can you imagine what they're going to get? Probably nothing, sadly. But nevertheless, it's interesting that Harvey says they were going to go after him. I don't know what statute that would be. Obstruction of justice is the only possible one. And I think that's a big stretch for the Bureau to take an obstruction case based on that. Okay, here we go.
That never happened. It never happened.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, it was just a really interesting sidebar. We never really talked about, we never reported that.
Okay. So Harvey says then, you know, I didn't even report on it because nothing really happened. But again, I can't imagine why the Bureau would tell him they were looking into that. He must, you know, he talks a lot about what the FBI tells him. He said the FBI didn't talk to him for a month, but then the FBI has talked to him at all these different times. I mean, he must have a relationship with them in LA. That's all I can imagine. At least to some degree, the fact that they ghosted him for a month tells me the relationship cannot be that close. But let's face it, he's the one that is reporting on these extortion notes. And he got the first note. Remember, he didn't get the second note. We found that out with all of this. I always believe the second note always went to Harvey as well, TMZ as well. It didn't. The two local affiliates got two notes. Harvey got one note. And that was the first note. The note that seems the most legitimate, but the Bureau, again, I want to be crystal clear. This is what they say. They weren't solid on this. The other ransom demands may potentially be legitimate and are being investigated as such. You see how they verbalized this or worded this, not verbalized it, worded it. They're wording it as, we think they might be true. Listen, if Reuters had been right and the Bureau wasn't looking at any of these, the Bureau wouldn't have come out with this. They're irritated, really irritated, I tell you. Hi, Michelle Bellefontaine. I like that. Thank you for joining our channel. It means a great deal. Thank you so much. But they're not being strong here, but they're giving us this clue. Other ransom demands may potentially be legitimate and are still being investigated as such. They're being investigated as being legitimate. That's pretty. Again, if Reuters reporting, which said everything is false, their FBI source told them that is such baloney. Remember when it came out at the time, I'm like, gosh, that just does not ring true. Burglary is off the table. I mean, for me, burglary's been off the table since about day three. But that didn't mean it wasn't on the table for many. I mean, I've heard other FBI agents, I could name his name, but I won't, shockingly thought it was a burglary. I mean, Tony, who I absolutely love, thinks it, was the next door neighbor. He asked me about that actually on his show I'm like, Tony. It wasn't a misidentification, I don't think. I think it was very well planned. It's very much, sadly, against Nancy Guthrie. I think she was very targeted. But the Bureau tells us this right here. The extortion, in other words, the TMZ 12, they're without legitimacy. But the other demands may potentially, they're not 100%, but they're investigating them as that. But this is what the important thing is to me. This case continues to be an investigation, a kidnapping for ransom. So yes, burglary is off the table per the FBI. The FBI is telling us this. Stickle4, I think I said that right, says the Reuters rings true. The Reuters is absolutely not true. And that's why the FBI put this out. It said Reuters, I mean, they address it right here, have received several ransom notes. They're specifically, this came right after Reuters. Reuters came out and then this came out. This 100% is saying, don't believe Reuters. We're not sure yet. None of them are false. We are not saying the first ransom notes are false, because there's a big difference between the 12 extortion notes. Extortion is a different crime than ransom. So, and the Bureau has been on the case since day four. That's according to Kash Patel. And it's being run out of Phoenix, FBI Phoenix office. It's FBI's Phoenix's Safe Streets Task Force. So they are very much involved and I think calling the shots on the day-to-day stuff and then filling in beloved Sheriff Nanos. But no doubt, just to make this clear, this is exactly what happened in Idaho too. And I'll never forget saying it on air, and Chief Fry was very upset with me. I said, Chief Fry has jurisdiction, but the FBI is in charge on that. Meaning, at that time, there were 60 agents working. There were a slew of the intel clerks that were studying the Brian Kilberger's car, trying to figure that out. And no one, just so you understand how it works, no one who is working on a task force case and is running here and doing this, and the supervisor is an FBI supervisor over that task force. He is not calling Nanos with every step they do on an investigation. The IA, the supervisor over the IAs, which are intelligence analysts that are the ones that are actually looking at all the video surveillance, sitting there day after day after day, reviewing it all, looking at all those hints that come in, right? All of the, why is that word escaping me right now? The tips that come in on the tip line. Sorry, for some reason that just word just evaded me. Those supervisors and those analysts aren't calling up Nanos with everything they're doing. No way that's happening. And that's what I tried to point out too on the Idaho 4 case. When you have the Bureau give 60 agents and they're in charge, they're in charge of what they are doing. It's reported back to Nanos because at the end of the day, just like with Chief Fry, they are responsible for adjudicating the case. And for those of you who haven't heard it, as recently on News Nation with Katie Pavlich, Director Kash Patel, I've seen him three times say it now on a podcast with Katie Pavlich, and then very recently again in a press conference about Tren Daragua, the Venezuelan gang. You know, they had this big takedown and then somebody got in and threw a scud and said, yeah, but what's going on with Kash Patel? So it's very interesting because he says, listen, they're in charge. We're assisting. So yes, they are going to be in charge, I promise you, of the adjudication, because the Bureau wants no part of it. And the Bureau, if those notes end up being legitimate, they could come in under interstate commerce because it was a wire that was used to communicate this. And that gives direct venue for the Bureau. Whether they cross state lines or not, it doesn't matter if interstate commerce is used to affect the kidnapping. So they don't want it. I promise you they don't want it because of what we're going to discuss next. All right, let's keep going here. Here we go.
But I remember somebody told me that, and they really believed it. But again, maybe there's no proof of it because they never prosecuted anybody on that. But it's just an interesting, it was just an interesting kind of sidebar for me that they were really having trouble containing things because there was so much interest. Everybody was getting in everybody's way.
Well, and the most contaminated scene you could ever imagine if you would sent to or had to wanted to design how to have a transference issues and create a defense lawyer's petri dish for mischief, it would have been the way that crime scene was handled.
That's
interesting. Did you hear what he said?
You know what I was just thinking?
Did you hear what he just said there? He's saying that the crime scene, the Nancy Guthrie crime scene, because of what we've been discussing, right, is a petri dish for a defense attorney. Sad. I mean, it is. It's going to be a mess when it comes to trial. And it's really going to be terrible if the Bureau pegs who Porch Guy is and they have a lot of great information But he gets a great attorney and they sidebar how crappy the investigation is and all the other issues that they get. That's what you do when you have a rock solid case against somebody, assuming that they get that, if they get that, you go, but look over here. Look at the crime scene that they searched four times. Look at this mess. They left the mat. They, you know, maybe on that mat could have been who really did it. The DNA of who really had that bite light, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, it's concerning. And to hear him put out, you know, concerning. All right, we're going to go to our next clip.
Oh my God, I think this is it. To see if they can
start at the end. Let me start at the beginning. So this is a different clip of a different information provided again by attorney. He is an attorney by education, Harvey Levin. He's not a dumb guy. He's a very smart guy. He's built a multi-million dollar empire with TMZ. Here we go.
I got a call and they said, look, we are going to put some money in the Bitcoin account to see if we can trace. Oh my God, I think this is it. To see if they could trace the money back to the person who took it. And they said, we please do not report that money is in the Bitcoin account. It's going to compromise the investigation. And so I didn't. We didn't say anything, but we saw the money surface. It was only like $270, $285. I think they were just trying to trigger something. And so we didn't say anything. And then a couple of days later, one of the Tucson stations that also had the Bitcoin address published a story that money went into the Bitcoin address. And the FBI didn't want that known. And I called somebody at the FBI. In fact, I was on the phone with two people at the same time. And I said, well, this Tucson station just reported what you told me not to say. What happened? And one of them said to the other, did that Tucson station also get the ransom note? And it's like, yeah. I mean, it was widely reported they did. So I think they forgot to call that second Tucson station, and the second Tucson station blew their cover on what they were trying to do.
All right. So let's break this down and talk about what Harvey's saying here.
So I got a call and they said,
so what he's saying is, okay, let's
look, we are going to put some money in the Bitcoin account to see if we can trace. Oh my God. I think this is it. To see if they could.
The FBI calls him and says, we're going to put money in the Bitcoin account. Now you might be asking why would they call Harvey Levin? They're going to call him because he knows the Bitcoin account number. And when you, it's different than a bank account. Bitcoin accounts, when you have that number, it's public. You can see everything. So in other words, just imagine, and I really hope y'all go back and look at the Bitcoin expert. He was on with us twice. So good. If you right now put money into your savings, or somebody puts money in your savings, I can't see that, even if I have your account number. Bitcoin doesn't work that way. In Bitcoin, if somebody has your account number, anything and everything done is public. All I need to do is get on and look at the chain blocks and look at your Bitcoin account number, and I can see. So the FBI calls him essentially to say, this is what we're going to do. Please don't say anything. Because the only people that could know are the bad guys, TMZ, the local stations, and the FBI. And that the FBI wanted to keep it that way. Right? So they give him a call. And this is what they ask.
Okay, let's Brace. See. The money back to the person who took it. And they said, we please do not.
So isn't it interesting? We're talking about, so they decided to tickle the wire, which we've been talking about this a lot, tickling the wire. But the amount they tickled it with was about $200, almost 300. He says the number, he gives the range of the number, which we'd known about, right? We knew that they did that. That's not really tickling the wire. But because I don't think they would ever bite on it, but it made me wonder. And I wondered this from the beginning. If by putting something into an account, if there is some trigger that is giving chain information to the cybersecurity SMEs, special subject matter experts. Did you follow me on that? In other words, I wondered if even the smallest amount, what they put in, could cause something triggering within the mechanism of the chain block that a subject matter expert could be able to figure out a nexus to his wallet. That's why I wondered when they did that. It wasn't about them thinking they were really tickling the wire in the true essence of the word, getting them to take action. I don't think they would have done that for that. I think it was about, could a chain block, just that being done on the chain block, could it help authorities, again, these subject matter experts, right when it in, does that trigger something within the imaginations of the computers that run them? And I've shown this all up here. They're called noids. I know this is, sorry, I'm getting way into the weeds, but could this noid somehow give information about this account? It's all crazy. But it didn't work, apparently, or else they would know something by now. But what Harvey's point is what the heck? The Bureau told me not to say anything. I don't say anything. And then the local people say something, because likely the local people weren't told by the FBI, like TMZ was told, not to say anything. So there's a couple of things. One, did they say that, or did they not call the local stations because the local stations really hadn't been the ones coming out? I don't think so. If I'm the case agent, I'm calling everybody. I'm saying, everybody with this Bitcoin address, this is coming in. Please keep it quiet. We do not want this leaked. That's what I'm doing. But he goes on to say, and I'll let you listen.
Report that money is in the Bitcoin account. It's going to compromise the investigation. And so I didn't. We didn't say anything, but we saw the money surface. It was only like $270, $285. I think they were just trying to trigger something. And so we didn't say anything. And then a couple of days later, one of the Tucson stations that also had the Bitcoin address published a story that money went into the Bitcoin address. And the FBI didn't want that known.
Harvey got scooped. But, you know, to Harvey's credit, he didn't say anything. And we know that. We know the order to which that leak came.
And I called somebody at the FBI. In fact, I was on the phone with two people at the same time. And I said, well, this Tucson station just reported what you told me not to say. What happened? And one of them said to the other, did that Tucson station also get the ransom note? And it's like, yeah. I mean, it was widely reported they did. So I think they...
So this looks really bad, right? It looks like one hand of the Bureau doesn't know what the other hand is doing. I will say the chances that Harvey Levin, when he decided to call in about this, the chances that he spoke to the case agent or somebody truly on the case, I don't know, but I don't get that sense. It seems he says, well, you know, I called him up and there were two people on the phone and one person didn't know that the other. That sounds like somebody not in the weeds on the case. Somebody not in the weeds on the case is who he's talking to. And, you know, when they were trying to get all the information and saying, really? I didn't know they were, because that agent probably didn't know. So it's confusing to me who exactly he was talking to you, but I got the sense this wasn't like the people in the know. And so it looks bad. There's no doubt, you know, I just don't know why you wouldn't have somebody call Harvey Levin if you're going to, or he called in, sorry, call into the FBI. I don't know why you don't hook him up with somebody that you know is in the know, but they could have been busy, whatever. Harvey was probably clearly upset, saying, listen, I kept my mouth shut. And then one of the other affiliates, and, you know, we don't know why, but the inference here is that the Bureau didn't contact the local station. We don't know, but boy, I can't imagine that local station would go public if they weren't told to. So either way, it looks bad. It looks bad on the Bureau if indeed they called them and said, please don't do a story, and they did a story. It looks bad because it looks like they don't command the respect that should be afforded in an investigation like this, of keeping your mouth shut when the people working it are asking you to. And then if it's the opposite and they weren't even contacted, that looks really bad. So either way, you know, Harvey has a point here, and that's his point. You know, I wrote a tweet today and I said, I still don't understand, and I'm sorry, I'm going to die on this hill, but I will never understand why, as we speak right now, Porch Guy's face isn't up all over Tucson. I will never understand that. And why the billboards aren't in Spanish. I will also never understand why there aren't flyers going out everywhere, blitzkrieging everywhere in and around Tucson, billboards going to Mexico. I can't understand it, especially after speaking to the vice president in charge of the billboards that put those billboards up that said they're electronic. All I have to do is flip a switch and I can make it the opposite, but we just need the Bureau to approve it. So this is a mystery to me. This is an absolute mystery. They do not need Nancy's face out there. They need Porch Guy's face for somebody to recognize him and come forward. And then when I saw this, and I thought, did they not say something to the local studios? They, you know, about they were going to put this amount of money in. Did they only contact, could they have dropped that ball? I don't know, guys. Listen, I still have every faith in the Bureau. I still really, really believe it will be solved in time with, as Detective Lindbergh says, I called it luck. He didn't like that. It's God, without God's hand interfering. That's what we're going to have here. Somebody recognizing Porch Guy, that hair actually going back to Porch Guy, some other DNA in the house that we're not hearing about going back to Porch Guy. You know, that's what it's going to take. A vehicle being found and getting a tag. It's going to be tough. All right, everyone, you have been amazing. It is 10:57, for heaven's sakes, 11 o'clock over here. I'm hoping I have some West Coast. What a great turnout on our Sunday night, 4th of July, 250th anniversary weekend show. I really can't thank y'all enough for being here and for being members and subscribers. And I absolutely love the chat. I'm always looking over, unless my glasses are off. My glasses are off, I can't see a thing. So anyway, y'all are amazing. And until next time, which will be tomorrow, may justice be served for the Guthrie family and for everyone who has somebody missing today.